Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
This week on Talk World Radio, we are talking about particular victims of the atomic bombings in Japan that you may not have heard much about before. Our guest has been on the program before, Brad Wolf. He is a lawyer and a former prosecutor, director of Peace Action Network of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. He is co-coordinator of the Merchants of Death War Crimes Tribunal, and he is the co-coordinator of the International People's Tribunal on the 1945 atomic bombings for the redress of Korean victims. He also has a new book on the writings of Philip Berrigan, published by Fordham University Press and called A Ministry of Risk. Brad Wolf, welcome back to Talk World Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be back.
So this new tribunal you're working on, we will have a link to it at talkworldradio.org. What is this about Korean victims of bombing Japan? Can you explain that for people who haven't been informed yet?
Sure. It's a fascinating and devastating part of the atomic bombings in 1945, a part that I was not aware of until I was invited to participate in this particular tribunal. And part of the colonization of Korea by Japan was the forcible removal of hundreds of thousands of Koreans from their mainland and during World War II placed in various cities in Japan as forced labor. And 75,000 of those Koreans were unlucky enough to be in Hiroshima and Nagasaki on August 6th and August 9th of 1945 when the atomic bombings happened. And so they became the unintentional victims of the atomic bombings on those 2 days. They were not enemies of the United States. We were not at war with Korea at the time. And yet up to 75,000 of those people were hit by the atomic bombings. This is a fact that's lost to history, and it's been covered up again and again. And the Koreans were victimized once by the Japanese in terms of being colonized and then brought there as forced labor. They're victimized again by the United States through the atomic bombings. And then they're victimized a third time because neither the Japanese government or the United States government would recognize their victim status.
75,000. This was in Hiroshima or Nagasaki or both?
Both cities together. There's a combined 75 to 100,000 Koreans in just in those two cities at the time of those bombings.
And these are people who were killed immediately or killed immediately plus injured, poisoned, radiated, and suffered horribly over the coming months and years.
Yeah, so there were up to 50,000 that were killed immediately, and the remaining were wounded. And then they carried their radioactive scars, their cancers, into third generation victims. So when I was in Hiroshima this past June, we met some of the victims, one of the first generation victims of the bombing, who was about 2 years old at the time. But there were also second and third generation victims of these bombings because, of course, the cancers are passed on. And one of the largest cancers, the most prominent cancers from these bombing is thyroid cancer. So they lose their ability to speak, which is such a just a powerful metaphor of their silent victimhood that they've been going through these past 79 years. But in Hiroshima, at this forum where we were organizing for the tribunal, this first generation victim from Korea stood up, talked about how he had lost his parents, his family, everything, returns to Korea after the war to find himself in the midst of a civil war in Korea, basically a proxy war between the US and the Soviet Union, goes through the devastation and horror of that, and the rest of his life is dealing with the cancer and the hardship of being this victim. And yet there he stood last summer at the International Peace Summer in Center in Hiroshima, very proud, very dignified, demanding an apology and an acknowledgement from the most powerful military empire in the world, the United States. And that's part of what the tribunal is trying to do, is have the world recognize that the bomb kills so many people beyond what we initially recognize, and it continues to kill even though it's 79 years later.
And how many people, similar to the 75,000 statistic, is the overall deaths from those two bombs?
In terms of just Koreans or Japanese?
Human beings.
Human beings. You know, I don't know the exact number of that. We've met a number of victims who are still surviving. There is a community in Korea, the Hapcheon community, where most of these atomic bombing victims have gathered and lived, because not only were they shunned by the Japanese and the Americans, but they were shunned by their own people, the Koreans, because in the immediate aftermath of the bombings, it was thought that this was contagious. This radioactive illness was contagious. And so they were hidden. They were not provided any kind of reparations or anything like that. And so this tribunal was organized a really impressive team of international lawyers from Switzerland, Germany, Denmark, Australia, New Zealand, all of whom gathered last summer in Hiroshima to lay out the legal arguments, because one part of the tribunal, yes, is raising public awareness about this, but these Korean victims are very serious about trying to lay a legal foundation to hold the U.S. accountable for what happened in 1945. And they feel that if they can do that, if they can declare that the use of atomic weapons was illegal in 1945, then by extension, the threat to use and the possession of nuclear weapons right now is illegal. They can denuclearize the Korean Peninsula and possibly denuclearize the world, or at least have an argument to do that. So those are the broad goals, and they're not necessarily looking for financial reparations. They're looking for acknowledgement, apology, and then an actual legal ruling. So some of the legal foundations that this legal team has been working at is the Hague Convention of 1899 and 1907, where though it didn't entertain the ideas of atomic weapons at that point, it nevertheless laid the groundwork for what you could and could not do in war, and attacking civilian targets and overuse or overpunishment of certain targets was prohibited. The United States attended both of those conferences in 1899 and 1907, and it incorporated the declarations of those conferences into their field manuals in 1940. So the argument extends that much of the language of that was relevant and was in effect in 1945. And when you read much of that, you can see that the use of an atomic bomb on a civilian site like Nagasaki and Hiroshima, not a military site, but the use of on civilian sites, is clearly illegal under those Hague conventions, which the U.S. was, because they put in their field manuals, it's known as Field Manual 27, since they put in there, you could make the argument that it was illegal.
I would make an argument, not, I'm probably the only living person who would do it, but I would make an argument that the whole entire war and every action within it was illegal under the Kellogg-Briand Pact, which was the basis for the tribunals in Nuremberg and Tokyo following the war. As part of an illegal war, this action was illegal and that action was illegal. And my God, the most atrocious action of all, these horrific bombs, their creation and use, was also illegal. But if you can find other laws that people find more acceptable, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. And I think you're spot on when you mentioned that. You know, there was the Kellogg-Briand Pact in effect at the time, which seems to have been ignored and continues to be ignored. These other laws are laws that they want to bring and try to incorporate. And when they look at suing the United States, of course, the government has sovereign immunity. But there are some exceptions, such as the Federal Torts Claim Act, where they can try to get exception under that. But if they can just make the United States aware of what these bombings did, it was the first time I was in Hiroshima this summer. I'd never been there before. That itself was a very powerful experience. And then meeting the victims of the bombings was very powerful. So I think so many Americans still fall under this false narrative that it was necessary and just to drop these bombs, the false narrative that it was needed to end the war and get the Japanese surrender, all of which we know is untrue. It was not a military motivation. It was a political motivation to use these bombs. And the Japanese, and unfortunately the Koreans, were the victims. They were part of the scientific experiment, part of the political experiment of the United States.
There were Americans there too, and
there were
other types of people as well, I'm sure. But it seems that Koreans were a significant percentage of the victims. And I don't know, tell me if I'm wrong, you don't usually hear about that. I've heard for my entire life about the Japanese victims, the Hibakusha, and the need to listen to them, and the numerous organizations of them doing wonderful work, educating and advocating against nuclear weapons and for the abolition of nuclear weapons. One organization now getting the Nobel Peace Prize. I think the first Nobel Peace Prize in at least 6 or 7 years that was actually a worthy recipient under the will of Alfred Nobel. A group that all these peace activists around the world have worked with for decades. But have these Japanese groups worked with the Korean groups? Are they integrated? Is there a division between these two groups of victims?
There is, unfortunately, still a division and some resentment between the Japanese and the Korean groups. You mentioned the group that won the Nobel Peace Prize. It was very unfortunate that in awarding that prize, no mention of the Korean victims was mentioned. It was just the Japanese who were mentioned. And so I've become keenly aware of the emotions involved between the Koreans and the Japanese, because the Japanese began colonizing Korea in 1901. So for 45 years, they were treating the Koreans as slave labor. Of course, there's the Korean comfort women that the Japanese used throughout the war. And then there are this forced labor that went on for decades that the Japanese used. And so it's a difficult issue. Even in the Hiroshima Peace Park, the memorial to the Korean victims had to be set outside the Peace Park for quite a while until Japan reluctantly let it be part of the Peace Park. So there's some difficulty there acknowledging the role Japan itself played. I was part of a ceremony the one day I was there that was really fascinating, because the Koreans were up doing a memorial on stage and giving speeches in the Peace Park. And then a Japanese lawyer got up and talked about his father being part of the Japanese Imperial Navy at the time in World War II. And he was apologizing for his father and for his people for what they did, the Koreans. And then there I sat as a citizen of the United States. So all three of these countries involved in all this and all of these feelings swirling around about what had happened there was a very powerful experience.
But it's not just current Japanese antipathy toward Koreans. It's the fact that the Japanese are memorializing their victimhood and don't want to include in that their atrocities, their crimes, that their abuse of Koreans that became victims of a U.S. atrocity. It's incredible how much effort goes into picking how to memorialize which victims. You know, I've been thinking about this since this escalation in Gaza, how we were all brought up in the United States and told how bad World War II was because it killed 6 million Jews, right? Never it killed 9 million people in camps, 6 million of whom were Jews. Never, ever it killed 50, 60, 70 million people, 9 million of whom were in camps, 6 million of whom were Jews. Never. It's, right. You know, it's always very carefully chosen, which makes you wonder about the sincerity of any of these memorializations of war victims. So do they really mean it, or is it, is it propaganda?
I think to a degree it's propaganda. It does allow for the proper study and reflection. And, you know, it was good to see the Japanese and the Koreans working together this past June. That was a very positive aspect of this. But Japanese history and what is taught to Japanese students does not include much of the Korean colonization. This is still a very difficult subject for both Koreans and Japanese. And you're absolutely right. The Peace Park is meant to be part of the Japanese victimhood. And if you bring in the Korean victimhood, it complicates the narrative because then the Japanese have to acknowledge the atrocities committed against the Koreans. And so it gets to be very difficult. Of course, like even when President Obama was there, the first American president to visit Hiroshima, he couldn't bring himself on behalf of the American people to apologize. He said in his speech, death fell from the sky that day, as if it just fell by accident,
Accidentally, yeah.
incidentally, yes. So, the history that we tell ourselves, the narratives that we tell ourselves are very important in justifying how we see ourselves in the world.
I think he also outrageously suggested that we couldn't get rid of nuclear weapons in our lifetime. Well, it was a wonderful idea for somebody else's lifetime. And I think acknowledging the horrors of committed by the United States and those committed by Japan against the Koreans at the same time is actually ideal if we're talking about mobilizing support in Japan for Article 9, for their constitutional ban on war making, for eliminating war and nuclear weapons. It's a good thing to acknowledge that war is horrific from multiple sides, and it's done, whether it's done to you or done by the flag you identify with. I mean, this is helpful education, I would think.
It is. And you cannot engage in war without engaging in atrocities. War is an atrocity. And all sides are going to be committing atrocities when engaging in war. And it's like General Curtis LeMay said at the end of World War II, the US general, if we weren't the victims, we would be tried as war criminals. And so, I think when you recognize what war does on all sides, there are no good guys and there are no good wars. This is savage. It's bestial conduct that's done. And innocents are killed. And the Koreans are an example of this. And for us to see this as Americans is very important for the Koreans to be recognized finally. The tribunal itself is to be held in spring of 2026 in New York City to coincide with the TPNW at the United Nations. And next year, of course, is going to be the 80th year, the 80th anniversary of these bombings. So over this next year, we hope to work very hard in this country to make United States citizens aware of this tribunal, aware of the history of the atomic bombings in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and turn out a large group of people in New York City in the spring of 2026 for this tribunal. And we've got people like Richard Falk and Marjorie Cohen who have already agreed to sit as judges on the tribunal. Listen to all these lawyers making their compelling arguments.
And when you say TPNW, this is a meeting about the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. And we will have a link up at talkworldradio.org to this commission, where to this tribunal that you are organizing. And you're just building awareness and support and attention until 2026, I take it.
Correct. So the goal here in the United States is to build awareness, shape public opinion, help get the message out in every way we can over the next year. The lawyers are working in Europe and in Asia. And then the team I work with in Japan and Korea are, of course, the victims who are giving us so much of the valuable information. So when you go to the website, you'll see videos of some of the victims giving statements about what happened on those terrible days and what their lives have been like since.
You mentioned, Brad Wolf, the myths, the lies that these bombs saved lives and were needed to end war and so forth. A lot of what you've heard, understandably, for decades from the victims is simply the horror, just how horrific it was. How much energy is going into the endless, eternal project of trying to debunk these lies?
A great deal, actually. We're trying to, in establishing the legal framework that the nuclear weapons, the atomic bombs were illegal in 45 and are illegal today, it's necessary to debunk the myth that they are needed at all. And the justification for them, of course, is, well, it ended World War II. Japan would not have surrendered. The land invasion had been decided against before the atomic bomb was even tested. So it was recognized that the firebombing that was so relentless in Tokyo and across Japan was proving to be very effective. There was not going to be a land invasion. So U.S. troops were not at jeopardy at that. And when you look at the timing of the Japanese surrender, they did not surrender on August 6th after Hiroshima, and they did not surrender on August 9th after Nagasaki. They surrendered later on August 14th once the Russians broke through Manchuria. And they were afraid then of the Russians coming down. And so it wasn't the atomic bombings that got them to surrender. It was actually the Russians coming through Manchuria. So this is all part of the false narrative that we need to get out. The U.S. dropped the bombs to intimidate the Soviets and keep them out of Asia. It was a scientific experiment. It was a political experiment, and it was illegal.
And the U.S. Was very concerned to get those bombs demonstrated prior to that Russian invasion, which they knew would end the war, and was very eager not to end the war until they got a chance to develop and use the bombs. Lies upon lies upon lies, I think.
And the lies upon lies go upon the living people. They're stacked upon the people. And so, you know, when you look at the fact that these are real people that suffered these atrocities, and when that is brought to you in the form of a living person standing in front of you who said, I was there 79 years ago, I was a young child, but I was there, I lost my family, I lost everything, and I was not at war with your country even. This was just a, you know, incidental fallout. And this is the way weapons work, and this is the way wars work. That really brings it home and makes you much more resolved to try to say, there has to be another way to deal with our international conflicts. We can't keep doing this same thing again and again of using war as a form of diplomacy.
I wonder, Brad Wolf, about the idea of asking the United States for an apology for something, not just the problem that it's something different particular humans did in a previous generation, for the most part, with a few elderly exceptions, but who do you ask? Because the U.S. government, I mean, the current emperor and the one to come, are far more likely to say, I'm sorry it didn't kill more people. I mean, it's likely to backfire. Creating a petition where you ask ordinary citizens of the United States to apologize on behalf of the U.S. government, you could get millions. Who are you asking?
We're asking the United States government. I like the idea of the petition, though. I think that's an outstanding idea, because if the citizens of the United States would sign on to that in an apology, that could be very powerful, too. So as we said, part of this is educational here in this country for folks who are not aware. But the formal apology is to come from the United States government, from the current administration, whoever, whatever that may be. And they are determined to go forward with this for as long as it takes. This process began in 2015 in terms of trying to organize this tribunal, when the Koreans first were able to say, we really want to pursue this both legally and politically. We want to pursue this this redress of our victim status. And so they're determined to go forward and get this acknowledgement. And they feel if they can do that, they can make a lasting contribution to peace in the world. Because if the weapons are declared illegal, if the use is declared illegal, and they are removed from the Korean Peninsula, there's a chance that that can be used as an example to remove them from other places in the world. And I was very surprised when I was talking with South Koreans to find so many South Koreans who want U.S. troops out of South Korea and want the weapons out of South Korea. Right? Yeah. One of the organizers of this tribunal is SPARC, which is Solidarity for the Peaceful Reunification of Korea. That's what they're seeking. This is a flashpoint for the United States geopolitically, using the Korean victims right at the center of the flashpoint. They're sitting right there. And they've been doing that ever since the end of the war.
We have just a few minutes left, and it seems to me the timing, unfortunately, is very good with the doomsday clock closer to midnight than ever before, with talk of nuclear war treated more acceptably than ever before. Any lesson that can push people away from, I mean, I've read columns suggesting that one so-called tactical nuclear weapon be used to show people what a nuclear weapon does, and then they'll never be used again. So anybody who can point out, actually, they've been used, and here's what happened, here's why we need to get rid of them, the timing couldn't be better, I think.
I think it is good timing. The cavalier talk about the use of nuclear weapons, tactical battlefield nuclear weapons, and things of that nature is absurd. When you look at the bomb in Hiroshima, a 15 kiloton bomb, a relatively small bomb compared to what we have today, and the devastation that it did to that city, and you walk through the Peace Museum in Hiroshima and you see what it did to so many people, and those three rivers filled with charred corpses, I mean, it was horrendous what happened there. And to think that that's a method of war that we would even conceive of doing it again is outrageous. So that is something we need to constantly remind ourselves. And as you said, we're 90 seconds from nuclear midnight. These are scary times. And the stabilizing effects are no longer there. And you've got a lot of actors in a lot of states talking cavalierly about using nuclear weapons, including the United States.
Including the United States. About a minute left. What can people do who want to help advance this cause?
I would encourage them to please go to the website that you've listed. If you're listening on the radio, if you Google the 1945 International People's Tribunal on the atomic bombings about Korean victims, you will find it. I wish I had a catcher website to give you right now, but I don't. But all the information is there. You'll see the legal arguments laid out, and you'll see how you can get involved. We've got great partners in the states on this, like World Beyond War, like Peace Action. There are about 15 partner organizations right now working with us that will help us mobilize and get the word out in the coming year. So reaching out to World Beyond War is one way to find more information out about this as well.
And we will put the link to that website up at talkworldradio.org along with this program. You can go there and click on it and get involved and help out, I hope, because this is going to need a lot of help to spread a message that some people would rather not pay attention to. We've been speaking with Brad Wolf. He is the co-coordinator of the International People's Tribunal on the 1945 atomic bombings for the redress of Korean victims. Brad, thank you very, very much for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thank you, David, for having me. Really appreciate it.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.